You are listening to the Boker Broadcast, a War Machine and Hordes podcast centered on the NJSOB meta. Sit back and take a listen as we discuss fluff, the rules, or anything else that catches our attention. Special thanks to the More Than Dice Podcast Network for hosting the podcast. And welcome to episode 11 of the Boker Broadcast. I am Seth Cohen, and with me, as always, is
Stephen Rabideau
and
Staten Island RDC.
All right, well, welcome, gentlemen. And here we are, post brawl 24.
Oof.
Are you recovered?
I would say so. At this point, yeah, it's been a week. It's been a weekend. You know, I'm recovered.
I don't know if I'm recovered. I'm a lot older than you, though.
You did a lot of work.
I did.
You did a lot of work.
I did. I'm pretty well exhausted. And it didn't help that as soon as the brawl was over, one of my professors was like, hey, you're going to turn in any work this semester? What do you need from me? I need a 10-page paper with a 5-page annotated bibliography. Oh, when do you need that by? Friday. It's Wednesday. Okay, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I did get that thing done right.
Can't 3D print that, can you?
No, I cannot 3D print a paper. So yeah, because I thought it'd be a good idea to get a doctorate. All right, but I digress. Let's talk about our brawl experience. I would very much like to talk about the steamroller packet after we did our brawl experience with the steamroller packet. I want to talk about a little bit about some fluff because Emergence 5 dropped. I think after that should be a cast, right? We wanted to talk about buildings and rules.
That's right.
Okay. So let's talk about our brawl experience first. I'll just go first because mine's the easiest. It was a great brawl.
It really was.
Yeah. Anything that went quote unquote wrong, went wrong from an organizer's point of view. Like, you know, the sub shop forgot to give me a vegetarian sub for a couple of guys. So I just sent someone out to get it.
The truck rental thing.
Yeah. Oh, the truck rental thing. Oh, scrambling Sunday morning yet again. To find a truck, I am telling you, I'm going to buy the light harness. I'm going to install it in my car. Next year, we're renting a trailer. I just didn't know that's what I needed to do or would have been done for this year.
Would they not let you rent the trailer without the light on?
That is correct.
That's best.
Tell me.
You had to go to a less scrupulous location.
Yeah.
That's what you needed. There's probably a couple of guys in Bayonne that would have been more than happy.
Yeah, but then I got to drive to Bayonne.
Sure, we can find something.
Yeah.
Jersey.
Oh, the funniest thing, though.
Find some landscaping guy. Like, listen, I need the lawnmower trailer for.
We did that one year.
That's
remember?
True. We did do that.
Was that the first year?
No. First year we rent. So it used to be that we could rent the U-Haul truck on like a Thursday and a Sunday. And then all of a sudden the U-Haul places.
They're all closed. Sundays.
Yeah. Well, U-Haul doesn't really have locations anymore. They not sublet.
It's entirely, yeah.
It's franchised, right?
Yeah.
If they're not open on a Sunday, you're not getting your truck or it didn't deliver and everything's closed. So sorry.
Right.
Like we were supposed to get that truck from that location. That location is closed today. So I can't get it for you.
That is the challenge of that kind of service is it's entirely dependent on other people delivering it in time.
Because the word reservation to them does not mean the same thing it does to us.
Right. That means that you have the idea of a truck, certainly.
See, now you, not being a Seinfeld fan, would really enjoy what you just said.
Oh, because I'm sure he did a bit on reservation.
He did a bit of it. He was renting a car.
Yeah.
And he's trying to explain how a reservation works. And she's like, sir, I understand how I don't think you do. Because if you did, I'd have a car right now.
And you know what? It's one of the reasons why I don't enjoy Seinfeld, because so many of his bits, and don't get me wrong, he's clearly very talented. He's clearly very funny. And I'm not trying to denigrate anything he did at all. But a ton of his bits, like, just being a middle class Jew growing up in the 80s, you get the same bits. Like I experience them. Like the whole
it's too real.
Like the whole black and white cookie thing that someone once told me about. Like we did that. That was just something we did.
It's one joke.
Seinfeld was in the corner of your house, like writing it down.
Right. Yeah.
Like, so, wow, that was good.
Yeah.
You have the sickest reason for not even trying to attempt to
like
that.
I didn't say I didn't
show.
Try. I watched a couple. It just didn't take. I'm allowed to not like things.
No, in this case, no.
Cultural touchstone, Seth.
I mean, it is definitely one of the most successful TV shows of all time.
Is this, like, probably the fastest we've ever gotten off track, just out of curiosity? It might be. I think it's up there.
You know, if anything, all I would like to point out is this is always what runs through my head. It's like, anybody can say anything, and I will think of usually a movie line, a song title, a lyric of a song. In this case, it was a joke in a TV show. Like, Anything you say, I'll always be like, boom, okay, that's from this. That's
it's
from
a this. Gift.
So you're that sitcom character, right?
Is there a sitcom character like me?
You ever watch Community?
No.
Yeah, okay, yes, clearly no. Neither of you yes, two but have, no. But...
I never have.
Turns out Arthur is Abed.
I don't know who Abed is. Mm. Is that an insult?
No, I would not say it is.
I just don't. Right. I just, you know,
now I'm gonna have to now I'm gonna have to watch Community to get go back and get that reference.
What I actually figured myself to be is Uncle Roger.
That, see, I don't know that one.
Uncle Roger is a YouTube guy. Or
oh, wait, okay, I do know that
he's,
one.
He's the.
I assume this was
the,
some.
He's the Malaysian man who picks on everybody else's food, and no one knows yes. how to make egg fried rice except for him and like three other people.
He does the reaction videos to people making rice.
Yes, or any other cooking. Yeah, right. Yeah. And I realized, God, I am so that guy
because
that's what always happens.
And he beats you to the channel first.
Does he do pizza though?
Yeah, but he does a great accent that I can't.
Are we doing Mr. Continelli and you do pizza?
I just watch people do pizza. Portnoy does pizza.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay.
It's true. That market's been cornered. Sure. All right. So once again, organizer point of view, Brawl was great. I would say my greatest consternation at this moment. Seriously though, I'm going to talk about things that I would like to change for next year.
Was there a chance that you were going to come on here and say, you know, the Brawl really kind of sucked?
You know what? If it did, I would. If it did, I would.
He would. Say,
I really would. But things I would like to go differently next year. Campaign in a Day was a great idea. I think the guys who were playing it appreciated the effort that was put into making the terrain that matched the scenarios. But those scenarios are entirely too convoluted, and they're really designed for basement play. They're not designed for a tournament. They're not designed, you know, it was a really good idea. If I do it again, I'm going to have to rewrite the scenarios a little bit. Or the other lesson I think we learned was that people who played the narrative loved it, but then there weren't enough people. There was two, like folks said to me, Seth, you made me choose between playing on my team or playing in a narrative on Saturday.
Right.
And or make me skip going out to dinner or to play the narrative on Saturday. So I think the narrative has to be its own 3-round narrative event.
Yes. I have to think something else.
Yeah. What's that?
I think you have to offer, if the team event starts on Saturday, we need to offer so many other things to do on Saturday that as a person on the outside who is debating on coming to Boca Brawl but can't find a team, doesn't have a team, doesn't want to be on a team, or doesn't want to play on a team, could still be like, you know what? I could play on the Big Base Brawl on Friday and or the qualifier. Or on Saturday, if I have no interest in the team event, who cares? Because there are these 4 other events that I could potentially do.
Maybe, but...
No, there's no maybe. That's the right answer.
We discussed this before. This isn't new.
So one of the beauties about the team event, though, is that it attracts all kinds. So, like...
I'm not saying don't have a team event. I'm saying for all the people out there who maybe don't want to, or because what happens now is people have to make a choice. Do I play on the team or do I do this one other thing? Let's make it harder. It's easy. It's an easy choice now. I'm going to play on the team event. Let's make it a harder choice.
So one year I feel like we did a little bit of that, not a huge thing. And then what we ended up doing was cannibalize from that extra stuff on Saturday and Sunday to fill team spots. Because what happens is, let me just finish. What happens is, especially as we get close to 0 hours, that last week, people get sick. People say, oh, gosh, I got called into work. And like, look, we had that dude who very last minute, like the most last minute we ever had, you said, you know what? This guy really wants to play. I'm just playing for a lark to be on a podcast team. Let that guy take my spot. He really wants to play.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what we ended up doing.
That was good.
I think once we securely have a real significant number of teams and we've got people saying, Seth, I want to go, but there's nothing for me to do on the weekend, then I'll start entertaining those kinds of ideas. But I think you're on the right track. But we can talk about that. I want to talk more about stuff that I want to change.
I would like to be able to appeal to the two guys who play in the middle of Western Pennsylvania, and then we play each other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's like,
and they don't. There's no way they're getting on a team or knowing a team, but they could still come and
participate.
Even if it's not War Machine.
Well, look, I had two guys that come every year and play Warcaster on Saturday.
Yep, sure.
Right, like they are great. We make space for folks. So
we need to have a secret Hitler event.
Oh God, I hate that game. But that's
I love that game.
I know it's a great game. I don't like playing it.
Really?
Yeah, can we? I want to get back
to 10 people in the house. That was awesome.
Sure. Sure.
I mean, I don't know how it is on a small game. I only played it with 10 people.
No, I played it with a whole group. And
right, I'll pick a different game next time.
It's not a game for me. People love it. It's a great game. Not a game for me.
A little Spyfall competition. Some code names. Axis and Allies. One of my faves.
So, can you imagine?
Yeah.
Playing Axis and Allies all day.
Yeah.
At a VFW.
If you go to Gen Con, you could do it.
Sure. But we're not Gen Con. But anyway, let me get back to
it. We could be.
I'm with Arthur. VFW.
So...
But I think everything went great on Friday. I would say by round four on Friday, the prize table was just about empty.
And yeah. Just so you're aware, while you're telling us how great the event was, everybody's listening to this cast was there.
Not everybody.
All right, three people.
Not everybody. We're trying to. We are targeting that three people.
On the other hand, if we had
King of Saturday, looking at you.
We went through the gauntlet where you start off with Game of Stratego, Game of Risk, Game of Axis and Allies, and every other military-based game I can think of to be played at the VFW, because you said it seven times. That's exciting.
Now, what I think you should do, though, is
out of the bar.
You play Axis and Allies.
Yeah.
But then each time you invade, you have to play a Game of Stratego to determine how it actually goes, right? Well, and then instead of rolling Stratego.
Yeah, right, so
and then depending on the number of pieces in the things, you know, then you have the number of pieces with Stratego. Then each individual Stratego like encounter is going to be subdivided into a game of War Machine. So
that'll never happen.
Levels determined by
You know what you are right about though? I'm sitting here talking about all the things I'd like to change, and didn't I just do a prime cast and talk about all that too?
I call it War Machigo.
Yeah. I think in
Warhammer,
right.
You could do that. Because people will play Space Crusade.
Oh, yeah.
And then they'll be like, we're attacking this planet. And then you play a game of like 40K. And then if you really want to drill it down, you play a game of Necromunda or Kill Team.
In case you guys weren't cluing in, that was me trying to move his phone.
We know.
All right, disgusting. So, but I'll tell you what I did say on Primecast. Of course, I get onto Primecast, and the first question Emmanuel asked me is, where do people know you from? And I panicked a little bit. And what do I forget to mention? The podcast, right? I forget to mention the podcast, and I forget to mention WGC.
You just said you were my friend.
Well, we're going to continue that thing, and we're just going to tell our current listeners, hey, you guys should listen to the podcast.
All four of them. But I think the other thing was, I said this on the podcast, but I want to put this out there for everybody.
Mm.
I think the greatest coup this year was the Boker Bon Jovi, right? Everyone really resonated with it. It was really great. It looked really amazing. How the heck do you top Boker Bon Jovi? And then I was talking to Gonzo today on the phone. He goes, don't you know? I'm like, no, I don't know. Boker Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
I'm like, why didn't I think of that?
We call you the Boker Boss, right? Like, it's right there.
Boker Bruce Springsteen.
Yes.
So now I just have to find someone to design it.
Actually, I do like that idea.
He's the boss.
I'd rather have Meatloaf.
Is he a Jersey guy? Is Meatloaf a Jersey guy? I don't think he is.
I don't think so.
No, the point is he's a Jersey guy.
But he looks more like an ogre.
You're absolutely right.
He does. He'd make a good ogre. No, Meatloaf is probably from I don't know where.
I don't know. I can look it up.
I'm sorry. I don't know that offhand. But
that's all right.
Oh, by the way, warning everyone now, the board attorney might call and I might have to pause and take a call. But
what other bands are there from Jersey?
I don't know.
Number if you like look for
them. Oh, John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band.
Yeah, but who's one of my favorites? Reference?
Anybody who's seen the movie, Eddie and the Cruises.
Yeah.
Big movie of the 80s. Watch that with your parents, kids.
Yeah. Boker Beaver. I don't know. A lot of trouble there. You get a lot of trouble.
No, it could do the Tony Soprano.
Yeah. Bad consonants in that name.
What's the problem?
It doesn't, no alliteration.
And like,
what do you mean?
Is there an iconic look? That would translate to Boker, I guess. You know what I mean?
There are a lot of people.
That would be funny if it was
my nickname for a while was T.
Okay. All right. So, but that's it from my end. I think.
How about a location?
Huh?
We should do a location.
You mean like a little building?
Didn't we try to do that one year for
Vermont Park? Yeah. Didn't work out well.
We tried to do the little VFW, but
we do like Rutt's Hut. It's probably the most famous thing in all of Jersey. Rutt's Hut.
I've never heard of this.
I don't know what that is either.
And now you can yell at us.
And you guys were both born in Jersey, right?
Raised.
I was born in Brooklyn.
How young were you when you were
born? Now I'm outnumbered here.
Three.
So you're from Jersey. You guys should really go kill yourselves. You've never been or heard of Rutt's Hut?
I'm looking it up now.
Clearly not, since we said no.
Is it the best hot dog in the world?
Okay.
Totally famous. Okay, up in East Rutherford.
It's pretty... Oh, it's in Clifton.
I don't know.
Yeah. Probably good reason why I don't know about it.
Could be a beef hot dog.
Maybe.
It's their own recipe. They deep fry them. That's why they call rippers. Because the skin cracks.
Interesting.
Ooh, I do like that.
How is it possible you a native Jersey person?
I don't know. I think there might have been some sort of mistake here.
Is there anything more famous in Jersey? Apparently there is, because you fucking didn't know. I mean, I could, I guess, what, Great Adventure?
Of course you.
You too. What? You.
I'm more famous. Never
mind. I'm
never mind. Anyway, let's move on. Let's
please,
move on.
Please. So, yeah, so from my point of view, Brawl ran really, really well. I can't say
Brawl, about Brawl was good.
I can't
Brawl
say
was enough, good. Yeah. I walked there. I didn't have the distraction, not the right word, like Steve did, where he was concentrating on his games, and obviously he had a limited scope.
Yep.
I didn't have your thing, where you had to be diligent and vigilant and pay attention for judge calls and things of that nature. I was able to freely walk around. I was able to kind of nose around, see what people were playing, and I can say everybody was having a good time. I didn't, like, you know how sometimes you just walk by and you can see someone's got, like, the frowny face and this guy just got the sour puss and all of that stuff and you know, like, things or whatever? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Everybody was, like, either lightly talking while playing or a little bit on the quieter side, and maybe the person whose turn it was, you know, activating and such, would be talking just to let their opponent know what they were doing. The only critique I have, and it's not for you, and it's not for you, it's not even for me. It's for everybody listening. Paint your armies. I saw a lot of unpainted armies.
Well, they're very new.
I know. Right? I still saw a lot of unpainted stuff.
Okay.
I saw a lot of primed armies.
Yeah.
And that's as far as we got. You know.
Prime your prime. Now paint
your
prime.
I don't want to say half, because half is strong. But there was a lot. Okay. I felt that there was a lot of gray. It's a lot of gray.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's fair. You know what? I said to...
And paint some more brighter colors, people, because everything did kind of look gray and drabby. And like, nobody had an armor that popped. There was one. There was one where the guy used, like, a brighter red or a brighter yellow.
Yeah.
And then Steve King's army, because he used a brighter yellow, his army actually stood out a little bit.
Yeah.
But a lot of the other armies kind of blended, especially with the tables, because the mats are a little bit on the busier side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything just kind of blends.
Gotcha. I'll tell you this. I was saying this to Adam Olshager from... Broken Egg.
Who was there?
Yeah, he was there. He was there for Broken Egg. He's also there representing Privateer, and we thank him for being there. What I noticed this year, and this is going to sound odd, but let me get it all out. The last 2 years, you know, we still had the largest War Machine event around, but people were there enjoying each other's company, playing War Machine. Mm. This year, everyone was playing War Machine and enjoying each other's company.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were really, everyone was really enjoying the game and enjoying playing the game with everybody.
Yes.
And that was a big difference, and that was just amazing to see. But I really, really want to talk about your experience there, Mr. Rabideau, because you were there Friday. You know, you were doing the thing that that we do, helping out when you eventually did choose to show up to the hall there on Friday.
That's right.
Thanks for coming.
I was there at 8 a.m.
You were. But
I had just flown in from Vegas, and boy, were my arms tired.
Yes, I know.
Were you really in Vegas?
Yeah, he was there for your work conference.
Work conference.
I know, right?
Yeah, he was there for the work conference. And Thursday, you know, we're like, we load up the car in the afternoon, and people are calling me all day long, and I'm like, I'm at a teacher training. Like, I'm training teachers. I'm working.
I mean, my boss was there.
Just the two of you?
Yeah. A lot of automation stuff.
Too bad they couldn't automate the conference. You didn't go.
I know. I wish. Right.
Right. So
turns out, if you're not really interested in gambling, there's not much to do.
Well, there's one other thing that you could do, but I don't think you'd be that interested in that either.
No, less so. Less so, I would say.
Let's talk about your experience as a team captain.
Yes.
At the Boker Brawl, and it should be noted that your team won.
That's right.
Did your team win?
Yeah.
Oh, I was wrong.
Yeah.
I actually thought Riker won because I saw him with the picture, but he's got second.
He's got the silver.
They got second.
Silver.
Yeah. I would say, as a quick aside, the Bokies as awards were very well received. I'm very happy.
I certainly received it well.
Yeah,
I bet. It's probably the finest award I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it was pretty.
Wait till next year; it's gonna get better.
You don't even realize I just complimented myself.
Yeah,
the fucking thing is my idea. Don't you know that?
It was.
I do not.
Are you aware of what my batting average is in this little trio? of how all the good ideas, where they all come from. They all come from this guy. The one who looks like the ogre actually is the wizard.
Yeah, yeah. Although something could be said for the number of ideas that come out that we pick the best ones and do them.
He's Italian, you know? Actually, throws it at the wall, he sees what sticks.
I get what you're saying there. I don't do that.
Okay.
I have a little bit. You spitball 4 or 5 ideas sometimes, but I don't throw shit at the wall.
No, you don't. I'm just teasing you.
Yeah.
Honestly, so I don't say this enough. I think your contributions to Brawl are under-recognized, and I try, and I'm not always successful.
Oh, I recognize that you under-recognize. Believe me, I have a mental tally. It's kind of like debt.
Yeah.
I know every person who owes me money.
I'm sorry I said anything at all.
Yeah, here we are.
Honestly, is what it comes down
anyway,
to.
Anyway, I had a great experience.
That's fantastic. That was about it.
I had a great experience. It was very fun. It was great. It was nice to be able to do it. So I really appreciate it, Seth, that you, were able to just run the whole thing along with David so that I could do it. I really appreciate that. And obviously Seth, did such a great job printing all the terrain, and then David helped out with that as well. But, but yeah, it was a great experience. And then Schwenke. Yep.
Schwenke helped too.
The wind stuff in particular. Yeah. But yeah, it was,
talk to me about the, you had an algorithm of some kind that you used.
Yes.
Is it top secret? Are you allowed to talk about it?
I mean, I guess. I mean, it's just like or I don't think it's really top secret per se, but it's a useful tool. Like, it's a thing that people use. From people in Europe.
Okay. And what does it do? Like, it's like, how does it work?
Yeah. So all it does is like you give your ratings in, like you look at all the matchups and you assign numbers to them, and you just say, okay, I think this is good or bad, and you give it a number ranking. Uh-huh. And then all it does is like it spits out the branches. So it just spits out all the possible combinations that could happen. So you look at the numbers and you say, oh, this seems good. This seems like a good branch to follow. So I'm going to do that.
So do the players on your team input the numbers, or do you put it in for them, or do you talk? You copy.
I have
them
to do the numbers. Yeah. Cause it's a matter of like, they're assessing their matchups. So I'm going to let them do their numbers.
And so what if one of your teammates says, okay, I'm assessing my matches the following way, and they're wrong. Like, what if you think they're absolutely wrong on their assessment of themselves as players or their army?
So if I thought they were absolutely wrong, I could go in and, change the numbers or whatever and like make a decision based on that. But I don't pick people from my team that I think are going to do that. That's part of the thing, right? It's like part of the team composition is just like trusting that your teammates are going to make the right choice.
Okay. So what do you think, other than not losing a game and getting 3 wins every round, right? That's what Matt McWaters used to say. You just focus on 3 wins because that's all you need.
Yeah, we went for 5, but...
Okay, sure. What was the key to your team winning out for the weekend? Or what were the keys? What were the big things that you would say really helped?
So I think... So my team consisted of myself, Steve King, Cody DeMunn, Mike Gabarini, or Garbarini. Sorry.
Garbarini.
And then Rick Coe.
Right.
So that out of 3
of
those.
I've been saying Coe for years and he hasn't been correcting me, and it's apparently Coe.
It is Coe.
So it was the 3 Buffalo guys.
Yes.
And 2 Steves.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's double decker Steve
sandwich. That's why it was a double decker Steve sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the meat is the Steve, right? Like, you don't call a sandwich by the thing that is the bread. So I did organize my team in a way that put us in the middle. Okay. I just want to stress that because there is some disagreement about that, but I'm asserting it right now.
All
right. He's listening. Maybe
eventually.
But anyway, so I think part of the key was, just assembling that specific team was helpful. Yeah. Right. So I just kind of glommed onto a Buffalo team because 2 of my guys were from Buffalo. So Mike and Rick are part of my WTC team. Right. So I wanted to make sure that we were playing together for this so that we could do that. Right. Like just have the experience together.
Sure.
2 of my other team members, so Jake Van Meter and Justin Dew, they were on the team that came in 2nd. So we faced them in the finals. So I do just want to say that our team collectively was in the finals. Right? So like when I got to the finals, I was like, I can't really lose. Like as a team captain, considering WTC, like I can't lose here. Like I feel very good about this. But yeah, so it was assembling that specific team. We chose our lists like... we're taking whatever based on like what we want to practice and stuff like that. And Cody specifically just like, he just kind of jumped in with Dusk. Right.
Yeah.
But we all thought, hey, these lists are good. We just wanted to build good lists.
Yeah.
And then we took Steve King in because, I love Steve King and he's always great to have around. And I love to have another Steve
sure
in my team for sure. And then he took Storm Knights. And we just slammed him into every Storm Legion player we could find. And it was awesome. Yeah. Like, I've been on the receiving end of that over and over again. It's awful. Yeah. It is so bad for Storm Legion. It is the worst matchup you could possibly have. Because he does not care about electrical immunity. Because right. He's playing Striker 3, and he's going to charge at you with his double weapon masters and just murder you. And you're like, oh, my E-leaps, they're not doing anything. It sucks. So we had this list composition that I think really helped. So there was not a ton of bad matchups that we were going into. Like, there were a few of us that were like, okay, I don't want to see this. But, you know, that would be two out of five people would say, I don't want to see this. And so we were able to manage that, you know, throughout our our matchup process. I do think having some kind of system that we had ahead of time in order to determine the matchups, that was a huge help for me personally. Having played on a team before, it can be tough if you go into a matchup and you say, and your captain asks you, hey, how do you feel about this? If you haven't really considered it, or even if you have considered it ahead of time and you say, oh, I feel good or I feel bad, you end up in the matchup you get and you, like, personally, I wonder, did I make the right choice? Was this the right choice? Like, right. And then I see the list on the table and I wonder again, was this the right choice or something, you know? And having a system built ahead of time that just takes all that out, huge confidence booster. You go into your matchups thinking, I know why I'm here. Unless, maybe it's to lose. Like, I might be going into a bad matchup, like, intentionally. But the reason I'm here is because that gave better matchups for other people, right? Yeah, so I think, you know, the two main things were, it came down to, you know, having strong lists. Like, I don't think any of us none of us were going in with lists that we felt weren't strong, right?
Sure.
Obviously. So we had strong lists, and then I know that, at least, you know, three of us were very confident in our lists, having played them a bunch of times, right? And then the matching process was just like, it took a lot of guesswork out of it. We had already evaluated, we had already settled on these things, took the guesswork out.
Sure.
So we went into every matchup feeling confident.
All right, so now I'm going to ask you to kind of flip your thinking for a second. So we had a couple of teams that over the course of the weekend disintegrated for various reasons, right? Someone didn't show up. Someone wasn't able to show up. Someone needed to leave, you know. So teams kind of fell apart. And we had this one, you know, so we had, I think, two teams that were really, they just wanted to do their best showing possible. They didn't think they were going to show up at top table, but, you know, they just wanted to do a really good showing. So for folks that are getting this experience, the only time they're going to play in the five-person event is if they come to Brawl or do something else, you know, locally. How would you tell those folks to not overthink it, enjoy the experience, but still feel like you're playing the game?
Yeah, so the team aspect I love, actually. So this is very fun. Whenever I get to play in a team tournament, I always look forward to it. Because there is something to be said, like, for me, it absolutely is part of it. Like, I, if you want to play in a team event, like, if it doesn't matter that it's a team event to you, you just want to get there and play games, like, that's fine. But the team aspect of it, it's very fun to me to spend a night ahead of time and talk about matchups, talk about with each other. Like, oh, yeah, well, what if we see this? If we see this, let's, you know, we'll do that. Oh, look at all these lists, you know, go over the lists ahead of time. I think if you want the full experience looking at the lists ahead of time, you know, you don't have to do a deep dive, but like looking at the lists ahead of time is interesting. And then you talk about it with your teammates and you say, well, if we come up against this team, what do we want to try? What do we want to do if we can? And things like that. Sure. I think that's something that's very accessible.
Yeah.
In my mind, like anybody can do that.
Yep.
And whether or not it bears out, like that's kind of irrelevant to the fun of the process of like, you know, oh yeah, well, if we play into these guys, we're going to get this, we're going to go for this.
Right.
Now, I would suggest it's easier to protect than it is to attack. So if you're trying, if you have a specific player that wants to get a specific matchup, like offensively, like, oh yeah, I want to play this, that's harder to land than saying, well, I want to avoid this.
Gotcha.
So thinking in those terms is often helpful.
All right. The last time I got to be in a five-person team event was, remember when we went to the OTC, Arthur?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That was the last time that
2020.
That I got to
the last big tournament.
Yeah. And I think at one point we were sitting there with a pizza box, right? We were drawing out our charts on the back of a pizza box.
Yep.
And that was so much fun.
Yeah.
And then it was something like, Seth, you can win the following matchup, whatever it was, right?
Yep.
And then if I remember, it might have been Corey Doyle, but I don't think so. It was, what was that scenario that used to be in the Steamroller where if Magnus II won the role to go first, he was going to win with the three flags in the center?
Oh, Recon?
No.
I don't know when you told
me. No, no, that's not Recon.
None of them disappeared, right?
Not
at that point.
Not at that point. Right. So
Magnus II.
It was Magnus II.
And you just
runs to the center, beats, and then scores all the points, and you've lost the game.
Right, because at that point it was first to five.
Right.
So,
So it was, okay, Seth, you can win this matchup definitely, and then that was the scenario, and it was Magnus II, and then I lost the game. Mm-hmm. So, Henry was on that team, right? He came with us that year. That was a great fun.
That was a lot of fun. And that's the thing. It's like
Henry came with us that year?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Who else was in the car with us?
I don't know.
Brian Williams.
Yes.
Spike? Oh, no, Brian Williams.
Brian Williams.
Duh.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah.
Love to have him back.
Yeah.
Where the hell did he go?
He is, he got a promotion, I guess is the way to phrase it. So he's a music teacher.
Yeah.
And then
instead of trumpet.
No, I think he does a ton of the theater.
He's like the director of the
school play
of all the concerts and choirs. And like, it's a huge commitment. Like a high school competes multiple times a month at all these different places.
Okay.
And that's what he's in charge of now. Mm-hmm. So, but at one point, Brian will get bored of that and say, I need to play more War Machine.
That's
we'll
right.
We'll be here for him.
We'll be here for him.
We'll be here for him when he comes back.
Yeah. So,
good player, too.
He's a good
very
guy.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's the fun of the team event is getting together with your team, talking over these things. And then also, you get to, like, if I was in a singles event and Steve King was there, I'd be terrified, right? Because I'm going to play into that list and I'm going to get trashed. Like, there's no way to avoid it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you play in a team event, you get to avoid those things.
Okay.
I would never end up, right? So like it definitely ends up in a it's a very fun way to play the game.
Agreed.
Very fun way.
Which is why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you're on the fence about joining a team, one, we can find you a team.
We placed 11, I think 10 or 11 people this year.
10 or 11 people.
Got placed as mercenaries this year up until almost a week before the event.
Yep.
You know, just before list lock, I think.
Yep.
We managed to, and
I think people like 2 weeks before the event joined and decided, hey, I'm interested. What do you think?
Yeah. What do you got for me?
Yeah, it's a great way to play the game. It is a great experience overall.
Yeah, that's another one. I know. But
I highly recommend it.
So what I would like to talk about now is we had a whole weekend of implementing Steamroller. And we've run other events, you and I, where we've implemented Steamroller. But this was, you know, a highly competitive, well-attended, right event. And I want to talk a little bit about SR24. And I want to kind of frame the discussion before we have the discussion. We had Steamroller for many, many, many years, many, many years, really almost unchanged, right? With minor changes here or there. And I always thought it was important that we not be Privateer Press apologists, but at the same time, we want to stress positives, right? Because it's easy enough to get on the internet and talk trash and say nasty things.
Mm-hmm.
But we also want to call out things that we think need improvement or changes.
Sure.
So
I have one.
Yeah, I want to talk about Steamroller, and I want to discuss the and we're obviously going to spend more time talking about things that we don't like than we do. But I want to kind of throw out there that I think as a community, we are failing to recognize that they totally revamped Steamroller. And the original Steamroller took years to dial into a place where we were all pretty happy with it. Years, right? To really dial in. And I would say for four out of the six scenarios they presented to us 1 year out of the gate, they've revamped it, and it's mostly pretty good. Not perfect. It tweaks and improvements that we needed, but it's mostly pretty good. So if we get down into the weeds of things that are wrong, let us also not forget that they really did a very fine job for the first attempt on a brand new Steamroller for a brand new edition.
I agree. Big time. Okay. I think, yeah, exactly what you said. I think four out of six are in a good spot. Five out of six are okay.
Yeah.
And then I think one out of six is not great.
Well, and the funny thing is, it depends on who you talk to with that one.
Yes.
Right?
What is your
one that stinks on a stick?
Invasion. Invasion is my one.
And my one is Payload.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's a, and actually I would say that there's probably a third that would get discussion, and that's Two Fronts.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Two Fronts is much farther from that conversation than those two. Those two are allies.
So real quick, what I do like from an organizer point of view, and I said this before on the cast, I like that the players are setting up the scenario and not the not the organizers anymore.
Yep.
I like the multiple scoring pieces. I don't love the mini game, but I think they're onto something. And yeah, what I mean by that, game. Do you? Yeah. What I mean by that is I like the if X then move this objective, if Y move that thing, and you get more points. And it, you know, I think they're onto something there. I like it, but it's a little cumbersome at the moment with all the things I think that have to be thought of or thought about during a game. Like that one, it's on the right track to being something great. I don't know what it is.
So one of my favorite things in Mark III, right at the end, pig sappers. Because you would put these mind markers on the board. Yeah, that was its own little mini game where I'm like, put these mind markers out there. I love doing that. And so
I loved those moments.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah. So I really enjoy like the little mini game of like, ooh, I can push this objective and now block your charge lane.
Right.
Or like your landing spot, right? It doesn't block charges, but whatever. So it you know, little things like that I think are very cool. Or like on battle lines, like I'm just shoving objectives all over the place and we're just like pushing them around, and then you know, I'm like moving this one away or I'm moving it towards the battlefield. You know, I like all that little stuff. I understand what you mean though, because there is it exists in a gray area.
Yes. Yeah, because they're not models, right? But they have to think, you have to think about spacing for them on the table like they are models.
Yeah.
Because that can be a little complex.
And there's little things where it's like, oh, I thought it had to move like a full 3 inches. And if it doesn't move a full 3 inches, it's not legal or something. Like there's little nuances. Well,
and truthfully, that is something that I think they should fix before the next season of Steamroller. I think they need to change the phrasing, even though they're not models, to match how models move. Because right now, you can say it has to move 3 inches or 5 inches, whatever it is. And, well, I can't get it that full 5 inches, so it's going to vibrate in place.
Right, stuff like that, where it's like, well, can I just, like, scoot it a tenth of an inch ultimately? Because I go forward and backward. You know, is that legal?
Technically, it is, right? And it doesn't feel like it should be, and it doesn't feel good if you're on the receiving end of it.
Yeah.
So I think that they should certainly fix that before.
Yeah.
The next season.
And then one thing that did come up at the moment. This happens actually. So I like the idea of, ultimately, I do like the idea of like variable scoring and like variable rules. I think in War Machine in general, they've done a good job of like, you know, with like power attacks and stuff like they've divorced a ton of things from like core rule thing. Yep. And now it's like it's specific. So they can be much more diverse in how they apply things, right? Like, I was just listening to the Tried and True, and they mentioned how, you know, the Chimera Beasts don't have Serpentine, but they can't trample because they don't have the symbol for it. So, like, they effectively have it, right? So, but it's not, you can be much more diverse when you have all these different things.
Yeah, Tried and True really does a fantastic job. They were very supportive at the Brawl, and I don't think we should ever miss an opportunity to shout out them.
Mm-hmm. So listen to their podcast.
Yeah.
And so, like, the rules where it's like, oh, one of the scenarios does not have Killbox.
Yeah,
one of the scenarios in Payload, you don't score the objective terrain. Right. It exists, but you don't score it. You know, I kind of like that.
Yes,
but it does get a little confusing sometimes, where it's like unexpected things can happen, like the non-scoring thing, like sometimes comes up, where they're like, "Oh, I thought I could score this. Nope, it's not in there."
So I don't think we should confuse unfamiliarity with the new format with bad rules.
I agree.
Right, just because we're not familiar with something, doesn't mean that the rule is bad. It means we're not familiar.
Yeah.
So when you were describing the mini game,
mm-hmm.
right? This game is called,
what is that game called?
Golem Arcana, mm-hmm. and it came out in 2013.
Okay.
It used microdots on all the pieces, including the table.
Okay.
And then you had a reader, and you had an app.
Uh-huh. Mm.
So you actually had a light pen thing that could read the microdots.
Uh huh.
And one of the things it did is, like, the rules for each terrain tile were on the micro dots.
Interesting.
And so when you touch that terrain tile, boom, the rules for that come up. But you can also get a side quest mission going on, which would, you know, distract you from, we'll say, the fight, but potentially give you some type of victory points or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tiles for the game were double-sided, and I think they also had another tile pack and whatever. I don't think it ever took off.
Yeah.
I was at the Gen Con after it, I guess, got kickstarted. and I really wanted it.
And it didn't happen.
Mm.
They ran out.
They ran out.
They sold out, and they're like, oh, we'll get them to you. And then, I don't know.
You know, life.
But no one played it. I never found a person to play it.
Can you relate this back to Steamroller?
Well, because of...
Microdots. I think that's a good idea for next year's terrain.
No, but it just, it's...
Do you know how to make a Microdot?
I don't, but yeah. Man, wouldn't that be neat?
So the weird...
QR code on the back of each piece?
No.
On the bottom of each piece?
It's not even a QR code.
I know, but like, that's what we could do.
No, but I think the reference, I don't know what the fuck I'm trying to say, but...
And I wasn't trying to mock
Privateer Press. Privateer Press has, in my experience, they have some pretty good resources. Like, they're aware, as I guess most gamers are, of a lot of other games
that
existed. And, you know, sometimes I wonder if this is like, they know about this concept, and like, you know what, how could we incorporate a little something extra into our game? And, you know, and it works.
Yeah. I gotcha.
I just had an idea.
Yeah.
But I think it's a bad one.
Okay, then feel free to, you know.
But I am going to say it anyway.
Oh. Okay.
So ultimately, so like what you were just describing, so it occurred to me because I was, again, listening to the Tried and True podcast, they talked about like painter's tape on the tables to like mark where things should be.
Hmm?
So that as the drift happens throughout the day, you could like move things back. You could also do like a QR code on the table that shows a picture of how it originally looked. And you just like set it back up to that every time. But then I thought about how much I hate like in a restaurant when it's like QR code for the menu. And I feel like
I don't care about that.
We'll write down that.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me.
Like,
all right. But you know,
anyway, I think there is a good solution there with the painter's tape, though, where it's like, here's a note where the house goes here on this table and stuff like that. Plus, if you do painter's tape, you can leave it on it.
Yeah.
And it's just year to year. You have these
if tables. You're not going to use mats anymore and you just want to paint the tables, you could fun tack down the 2D.
Yeah.
You could.
Yep. But anyway, where were we?
I was about to talk about Payload.
That's right.
So Payload's the one I hate. Payload's the one I hate because...
an organizer perspective, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So what we tried to do was we tried to have a specific setup, and it wasn't mine. Another organizer gave me the idea, and he gave me gave us this little cheat sheet. He said, you know, make sure 16 inches up, this over. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to give three pieces of terrain to each corner so someone has a good choice to make for their terrain
objective. Right. So you're not auto losing.
So I noticed that a couple of things happened. One was that we did that and then people put their trays down on tables and things moved.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we tried really hard, people were just like, wait a second, you know.
Although that was not a lot of tables.
No.
But so I think yes, some, but I mean to say, to me at least, and I think if people think about it for a second, they will recognize the fact that only like five tables out of how many ever we had,
55?
You know, only 5 out of 50. I didn't want to say it because I'm going to know if it's right or not. And then people are going to do the math. You know what I mean?
50 some odd tables.
There is a number of tables out there and only 5 of them had a problem.
Yeah.
That's not possible without intervention.
Sure.
And so like, let's point out that like the fact that there were only 5 that had a problem and that did get fixed.
Seth and David. I appreciate that. You know, it was right. More David than Seth, but yes, I appreciate that. But at the same time, there were also folks who were like, well, we have these three options, but you know, you forget something's a piece of a hazard and not a piece of terrain or they still didn't like their choices. And at some point it's like, look, guys, I understand you don't love the scenario. You don't like your choices. This is the game.
Right.
Like at some point, this is the game.
Well, people not realizing that certain things are clouds.
Right. That happened. But you know, so I don't love it from that perspective. And the other perspective is, it's going to sound weird. The times that I played Payload as a player, I don't like worrying that I'm going to auto lose.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or you know, even though like, okay, I've measured and I shouldn't, I'm very conscious that it could still happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I don't like that feeling either.
You give out the rules for every terrain piece.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we had a great terrain document that David Lee cleaned up beautifully. Like, I made the one for Captain Con, and he was like, yeah, I'm going to work on this. And then...
how big was it?
And then it
it's
was...
like 8 pages.
It was 4 pages, double-sided.
Double-sided.
And then Mike Garabini helped us out with the rules for the rich. He did a great job with that. Having that guy at any event is always amazing. Because one, I really like him.
That's why I picked him for my team.
And I like hanging out with him. But also, like, there was a rule. There was a rules call.
He's a bully.
I'm like, I know that this was ruled on the forum. And I could go back to my computer, pull up the forum, do my search, or I can walk over to Mike and say, Mike, what was the ruling on the forum? And he'll know what it is instantly.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
How many pieces of terrain are there?
Oh, like 12 to 14.
12 to 14.
10 to 14, but I don't think we did 10 ever. So.
No, we never did 10. Everything was 12 to 14. I think some had more.
So what we need to make is an 11 by 14 or an 11 by 17. And I want a little picture of the terrain piece that, like, that you use, like your whatever cloud effect, your thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the rule for it. And then a picture and a rule for it. And I want it to go this way. And then I prefer to
What's this way for the people listening at home?
Oh, I'm sorry. Vertically, right? Okay. So picture and rules. Picture, rules, picture.
Isn't that what I have on the terrain document?
Was that downloadable on the website?
But you have it as 4 pages and you have it as a downloadable document, which requires people to, like, have multiple pages. And what I want is it to be laminated and one on every table. Not every page. Not every board. You know how we put five tables in a row? One. On every table. So people are like, what's a cloud rule? For argument's sake.
Pass it.
Someone grabs it, hands that thing over. Or what is a dust devil?
Maybe.
There's a lot of terrain types. Maybe. That's the there's a lot of terrain types is the challenge.
Yeah, I don't.
You could double side that if you really had to.
No, there's a lot.
I don't think you're necessarily wrong. I don't
know. That'll easily fit. 11 by 17?
I don't hate it.
You're the guy. You're the guy. You
put it together.
I don't do pictures like that.
Arthur's an idea, man.
I feel like... Yes. I feel like one year I went somewhere and they had the rules taped to each side of the table. And I felt like that was cumbersome.
I'll go to your house. We'll take a picture of every terrain piece that you actually own, right?
Yeah, like all of them.
I get it. And then... we'll.
I even did it on a uniform background.
And then I guess we'll do it on Excel.
Which was a nice touch.
Right?
Thank you.
I think I
did it in Word.
Excel?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, because this way it would be.
So I want to talk about payload. So solutions, right? So I think for payload, I think the easiest thing would be you don't do a terrain feature. You just turn it into a regular old objective.
Right.
Instead of picking a terrain feature, which is like fraught because it's like, well, it could be here, it could be here, it could be here. If you just make it a 30 mil, done.
Yeah.
Like, then it's always in the same spot every time, so you can control it.
Right.
And then, so the other one, obviously, is invasion.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the other one.
That's the other one that everybody hates.
Which I think, I dislike it more than you, which makes sense as a player versus an organizer, right? Yeah. Because
I wish I was more of a player, but I'm not.
You're better off.
But so, like, the issue with invasion ends up being that the second player has several advantages, like several layered advantages. Yeah. And so, like, unless you are a highly skilled player, which I did watch somebody win on invasion going first, but you have to, like, that's now in all these scenarios, you have to pay attention. That's always true, right?
Yes.
In that scenario, you have to very much pay attention if you're going first.
Right.
Because you're at high risk of just losing.
Right.
So it's one of those where it's just like, it could be a situation where it's just like, well, like you said, like just sort of unfamiliarity, but it does feel much more strongly related because the second player, in order to basically win the game, so when you pull the objective, it's the one where you're pulling objectives towards your base, right?
Yep.
In order to win, you have to get it into your deployment zone.
Yep.
The deployment zone of the second player is 5 inches closer.
Yeah.
Like 5 inches further from the edge, right?
Yeah.
You move the piece at a 5-inch clip.
Yeah.
It takes 3 moves, and it's in your deployment zone, and you score 5 points.
Yep.
So 3 turns is all it takes. And those turns can be your turn, your opponent's turn, your turn again, right? Yep. So, like, that's it. So, like, if you get it the first time and they do not contest it the second time, it's in your deployment zone in your second scoring round, right?
Right.
And then they can't get theirs to their side as quickly as you can, right? So, like, there is a... It feels bad where you have to throw your army away to prevent that from happening in a way that, like, scenario is designed to drive conflict, right? Yep. Like, it's supposed to sort of do that.
Yes. Yeah.
But you end up feeling like it's so far.
There are times it feels worse. There are times it so punishes you.
Yeah. And you shouldn't feel punished.
Like, I have to put something like even the old way, right? Like, I had to put something on a flag or I have to put something in the zone knowing that it's just going to get wiped away.
Yeah, I think...
Yeah, there's no way to play it defensively.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of room there. I think that they should make those changes sooner rather than later. But that's just my opinion. But on the whole, I really like where Steamroller's headed. I like what they're doing with it.
I agree. And I think one of the nuances of Steamroller is that everybody obviously went second when it came out. It was like, oh, yeah, go second because you want to be the first to score. You have to win on your opponent's turn. It gives you the first opportunity to win, blah, blah, blah. But now it's a lot different. There are specific scenarios that maybe you really want to go second on, like Invasion. Mm-hmm. But it depends a lot more on your army composition now. Yeah. So it's a much more interesting conversation. So I think there is something to be said. I think it's in a good spot.
Yeah.
Overall, I think it's in a good spot. Especially if you're running 4-round events. Yeah. No problems.
And it's funny because, so I was thinking about this. What have we experienced in the Mark IV world of Steamroller? People want to play 3-round events and go eat and drink and talk about their game.
Well, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, how many events have we been to where it's been like, we're just going to cut to...
Locally, it's three.
It's three. It's every time. Yeah. Right? So this was the first event that I can think of where, because we played it over 2 days, we had to play 5 rounds. And I felt like people were experiencing some of these scenarios for the first time or something they just... If not the first time they'd experienced so rarely, that there was a lot of questions like, wait, when does this thing move?
Yeah.
Wait, up to 3, up to 5? Like, you know.
Yeah, there is a downside to having like 2 excluded scenarios. So like nobody ever plays them in these 3-round events because nobody wants to play them.
No one wants to
play. And then you get to the poker brawl, which goes 5, and then you have to play one of them.
Right.
Right. So it's a,
right.
It gets complicated. Yeah. But I think probably for next year, maybe I'm jumping the gun here. So, you know, we don't have to take it as gospel, but I bet we're going to split the Warfare Weekend qualifier into 2 pods. That's going to take some work to do, turn it into 16 player pods. Because I think 5 rounds on Friday, that's tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is tough.
Agreed. And I don't think it's going to be a problem to do it. Well, we just got to figure out how we get to our, they won't let us run. I don't think they would let us run 2 qualifiers, right? We have to run 1.
Yeah.
So how do we get that? So maybe that
50-point games.
Now I'm going to say this, Seth, and you can cut it. He's looking at the timestamp right there.
Yeah. All right. So I would
just bleep me for that. That would be funny.
That would be funny. All right. So what I would like to do, because we are starting to run a little bit long, I want to talk about the fluff. Because it's one of the things that
it was actually very good.
Yeah,
probably just
and actually feels like the wrong word to use there because I think they've been doing a good job.
Oh yeah,
but
yeah.
It was very just good.
Save that tidbit.
No, when are we going to talk about it?
Oh, nice cast.
So it's good. You should read it, Arthur. I know.
I was just kind of reading it with you two earlier before this cast.
Yeah. So Emergence Part 5,
and this is the last one, do we think? Or
I think so. I think it clearly ends the current stuff that's happening while leading into whatever new stuff is going to be happening.
That story gave us such insight into Everblight, right? That I a couple of notions that came out of this story that I really loved. So I didn't get the that somehow an Orgoth curse worked its way into Everblight's.
So I don't know if that is like a retcon-y type thing or if that was always true. But so like the idea is that Pyromalphic is the dragon that they ate at the Castle of the Keys, right? Like Ryas killed that dragon specifically. That was a big part of it.
Yep.
And then apparently he was cursed by the Orgoth, which I did not know until now. So I don't know if that was a thing that they added or what, but I mean, either way, it didn't feel bad. You know what I mean? Like, it did not feel retconny. Didn't feel like they added a weakness or whatever suddenly. Right. It was like...
So then, you know, Everblight has this idea, well, wait a second, looking forward, this curse is really going to not affect my pawns, my people, to way down the road when a lot of plans are going to have come to fruition anyway, so I don't care that they're eventually going to die because of this curse.
Yeah.
And it was this very, you know, Turek kind of far-looking, because, you know, Turek's thing is kill all you want, we'll make more. Right, like, oh, I lost this time. I'll win 1,000 years from now. Oh, I lost 1,000 years. I'll win 10,000 years from now. It's fine. I'm dying.
And his sort of like his backup plan is, or not backup, like his long term plan is with Kallus, right? So Kallus has like a clean shard.
Yes.
And he was specifically created to like hold the shard, or whatever.
Right.
You know?
So I thought that was really cool. What else did I really like about that story?
It leads into the body horror.
Yeah.
Which I like because I don't love looking at body horror.
Right.
So like I'm glad the models don't really lean into it.
Yeah.
But the story definitely leans into it.
Yeah. Well, what was it you were talking about, that part you liked, the Thagrosh?
Yeah, so like, yeah, Thagrosh and Ryas are fighting in the sort of climactic battle. And, you know, Thagrosh just ate a power pellet in the form of Bethane, which was awesome. They really, like, I don't know, that they really sold that to me very well. Yeah. Bethane is, like, crawling through the rubble being like, gotta help, gotta help, gotta help. And then, like, she's getting that directive from Everblight to, like, you gotta get there and help out in this fight right now. And so she, like, emerges from the cracks or whatever, because she's some sort of, like, half-slug being, you know? Like, she's very weird-looking now. And then she emerges, and immediately Thagrosh is like, thank you very much, and, like, rips into her, rips out the Athonk and consumes it. And it's like... Yeah, that's what she was going.
Tell you, you're helping by dying.
That's Everblight's thing for you.
Yeah.
So he just like powers up, but then like Shira shows up and has, or like took somebody else's Athonk. So like, whatever. Krissa died to Rassic, and maybe that's where the Athonk come from or whatever. And so she shows up and she throws some knives at Thagrosh, and Thagrosh dodges them. But it turns out one of them was not a knife. It was the Athonk that then, like, Ryas scarfs down. So then she powers up.
Right.
And it's just like a Pac-Man fight, left and right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, but Thagrosh has her, and he starts, like, ripping her head off.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, separating her shoulder from the rest of the body, just, like, ripping her in half. And then another head pops out of the gap. Because, like, with that extra thing, now, like, Saren is able to, like, manifest a little bit. And like, bites him in the face.
I like how they wrote Saren and Ryas's voices, like you have in your head this like beautiful harmonious two voice kind of thing, and they go out of their way to say no, that's not how it sounds.
Yeah,
no, they are discordant on top of each other, you know, kind of thing. And there's this part where like Saren is like, okay sister, I will let you have this, but I get mine later,
right?
Like you know, I will surrender and help you do this thing, but I'm gonna get mine later. We don't know what that is.
Right
There were a lot
I bet we do.
Yeah,
I bet that's probably the new faction or the new army.
Really?
Oh. I bet she's gonna split.
Oh, so she's gonna be another Chimera army.
Yeah, because that's the faction. Faction's Chimera. Army is Shadowflame Shard, yes. Right? So I bet they're gonna. I bet that's where that's going.
Good thinking. It'll be interesting to find out if that's true.
So the other thing I'm psyched about is the original Chimera makes an appearance. So Chimera spelled with a CH, right? Like how it's normally spelled,
right?
Because that's and then he gets a name. It's like Balgrind or something like that.
Something like that.
I don't know. I probably should look it up before I say it. But anyway, here we are. So that chimera is the dragon that was a little bit too close when Ios kind of blew up their whole thing.
Yeah.
And so he got blown up and he went nuts. And so he can't remember what he's supposed to be, or like he's just crazy.
Yeah.
Can't remember what he's supposed to look like. Can't remember anything about himself. And so he's a chimera, like he's just constantly like shape-shifting, he's a crazy dragon that lives in the wastes at the bottom of this like chasm, and he's just like nuts. But that's where Kallus is headed,
yes,
with the remainder, the only surviving shard.
That was good fluff. I think they're doing a great job with that. I'm sorry it's behind a paywall for a lot of people, because I think that would get folks really.
It's worth. You could spend $5 right this month and then be done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth the $5.
Yeah, I think after a certain amount of time, they should just make some of it free. It doesn't matter. I'm not a good businessman. So
well, the value goes up every month. Like, that's the thing, right? So, like, if you just want to pay $5 this month and do it, then do that, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. All right, so what I think we're going to do is move into some closing thoughts. We'll save our Judges Corner topic for the next time.
Sure.
Give us something to talk about anyway. And besides, we should record sooner rather than later, because there's a lot of new models out there.
That's what I was trying to say before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nobody listens.
I did listen. I just didn't listen.
And I think those models will actually, they might actually be at, we might record in 2 weeks, and maybe they're not out by then.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Well, we're going to record in 2 weeks.
I said, we never do that.
Well, we could try.
We record in 1 week.
We're getting
1 week.
We're getting toward the end of my school year. Things start getting a little bit easier.
Well, things ramp up for me, prepping.
Games. For WTC. I got to play games. That's all right. We'll get you worked in. All right, so let's move on to some closing thoughts there, unless you would like to hit us with a top five before we do closing thoughts.
Thank you. No, I have a request.
Okay.
A humble request.
Unlikely?
Very likely.
What is it?
So, what I need is I need every person out there to write in to Privateer Press and demand that they do a Kickstarter for dwarfs. Because apparently, I've heard a rumor
that they feel the dwarves didn't sell that well, and therefore people must not be interested in dwarves, where I would normally retort and say, no, your rules for dwarves have always sucked ass. And so people didn't want to play them because they were lower in power, except for, like, you know, a couple things. And that's why you had so many toilet bowls sitting on the shelf that you had to, like, you know, throw them in with the Signal crap that you gave out for those stupid boxes. But if you actually made some real dwarves, and it was even a Kickstarter, so there was nothing to lose.
A pre-sale instead of a Kickstarter?
Whatever. All I need is some people to get on board and get dwarves back in the game so I can be happy.
All right.
That's all I want.
Okay.
And I will do something, should we succeed, to embarrass me in some capacity for everyone else's entertainment, whatever it may be, within some level of reason, as long as it doesn't involve
dwarf porn.
As long as it does, no, that's fine. As long as it doesn't involve, as long as it doesn't involve mustard, mayo, or vinegar.
All right,
pineapple pizza is on the table.
Oh, you didn't include it. You didn't include it, sir. Oh,
done deal.
Wow.
I was all like, these dwarves, but now I am into it.
All we got to do is just write a letter every week to Privateer Press.
You got to do the...
Fill up their inbox.
All right.
Yeah, like Shawshank Redemption.
I was going to say Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, until they make dwarves.
Or give you an answer, and then you write two letters a week.
If they say, yes, we'll make some dwarves, then you write two letters. When? When? Now? Now? Can I have it now? 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 Be like Raging Bull. You want the steak now? Yeah, I want it now. Bring it now. It's burning.
So, Mr. Rabideau, any closing thoughts for you, sir?
Oof. I had a great time at the Boker Brawl. I know all my closing thoughts for the past 6 months have been looking forward to the Boker Brawl. So now I'm just going to say, well, I'm probably just going to be thinking about that for the next 6 months, about how great it was.
Yeah.
But you know what? The Susquehanna Shuffle.
Oh,
Scuffle,
yeah.
I mean. I'm the shuffle's the dance that we do my at the scuffle. Yes,
my goal is to play in that event, sir.
Yes, that'll be great.
I don't like the name of that one.
Okay, you're on record already, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, okay. They are aware. They are aware. All right, so until next time, everyone, this is Seth Cohen saying, I'm not just a game organizer. I'm a War Machine organizer, because the War Machine community is simply fantastic.